back together again. Yep, you and I, Tuesday, November 29th, 2022, on Connecticut Today. I opened the show with some comments on the previous day's special General Assembly session at the state capitol, and we spoke later on about that session with Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong. Later in the show, economic researcher Dr. Thomas Hogan joined us to talk about the future of cryptocurrency and less or more regulation. You know, I say over and over and over again, ad nauseum, maybe it strays into the ad nauseum category. I'm not real sure. But I say over and over and over again, don't get too wrapped up when it comes to elections here in the state, don't get overly wrapped up in the sexy elections. And, you know, I'm a purveyor of that, too. I understand. You know, I sit here for 4 hours a day saying, okay, got to talk about the governor's race, got to talk about this or that, because it's top of mind. But I think I'm consistent, because what I also say to you folks over and over again is the notion that you have a choice in the 151 members that make up the state House of Representatives and the 36 members of the state Senate. So do the math quickly. It's 187 people, largely in this state of 3.5, 3.6, whatever the official post-2020 census is of Connecticut. You'll forgive me if I don't have that tip of tongue top of mind, but however, there is 187 people in the General Assembly, men and women of both major parties. There are no minor party elected officials up there. It's all Republicans and Democrats, I believe. Now, one may have slipped in here or there, I'm not sure. But the tenor of how the state governs itself and the attitudes we have about that was illustrated yesterday, and it was going on while we were on the program here. And you recall that yesterday was this one-day special session to get together and pass some measures and to do some votes on, listen, some pretty important things. I mean, we get it. We understand it, right? But it's not so much, and follow along with me on this, it's not so much what was voted on yesterday, but again, as always is in Hartford, it's the hows. You know what they say, and I've heard this from politicians for years and years and years, you don't want to watch sausage being made. Joe Lieberman used to tell me that all the time. The sausage may be tasty at the end, but, you know, you don't want to watch it being made, because it can be ugly and it can be frustrating. What am I talking about? Well, we had this one-day special session yesterday, which on the face of it, in the end, everything passed the Senate with a unanimous vote. Everything passed the House with only six or seven no votes. But again, it was those few hours in Hartford yesterday were the definition of Connecticut political chicanery. I mean, it was the greasy side of how things have been done and shepherded through by the Democratic majority in the House. Here he goes. He's getting partisan. Yes, I am. You don't like it, you can turn the radio off. Go down the dial where they have discussions. You can do that. I lay it on the line here for you. Ever since the early 1980s, at least in the House. Now, the Senate has been tied at times, which has forced a modicum of common sense in the upper chamber, thank God. But that's not going to happen anymore, because people were so upset at Donald Trump, they decided to raise their own taxes. How that works, I'll never understand. But being all that, people always ask me, well, why don't Republicans do that? Why, if the Republicans want more votes, why don't they just do that? Why don't they go ahead and do this? Why don't the Republicans get any of their ideas out? Well, yesterday was a perfect example, a textbook example of why that's virtually impossible. Now, I don't want to say everything's impossible, but it's virtually impossible. In a microcosm, we had the perfect illustration yesterday in the one-day special session of why despite having some viable policy ideas, the Republican Party in this state, especially in the state house, is simply brushed aside, tossed aside by the Democratic majority. Now, they can do that. I understand that. You know, to the winner goes the spoils. Is that the phrase? I guess it is. You know, you are what your record says you are. The great philosopher Parcells says that. And when you win, you win. You win the elections, you win the elections. That's it. That's it. But there seems to be a disconnect between people understanding that and what they see and hear in the media about how things are conducted in Hartford. Let me give you an example. So what are you talking about, Paul? Let me give you an example. Now, yesterday, they had this special session up there. And in the end, everything was passed, right? And it all sounds good. The 25-cent per gallon gasoline tax suspension is going to be extended for a month. And then it's coming back 5 cents a month. So your gas starting in the new year will go up 5 cents a month for 5 months. So by May, we'll be paying that 25-cent a gallon gasoline tax. Okay, you kind of knew that was going to get phased back in at one point. Okay. They approved another $105 million on cash handouts to some, but not all, frontline workers who helped during the pandemic. Even though $1,000 ahead was virtually guaranteed to a lot of people, you know, basically the governor and the Democratic leaders got up there yesterday and said, well, go pound sand. We got reelected, so too bad. We've got almost $3 billion in black ink, but you know what? That promise we made, nah, too bad. See you later. Screw that promise. Okay, so they okayed the raising of the gasoline tax again. They okayed $105 million in cash handouts again. An idea I like very much. They've extended free local bus service through March, and I guess that's the longest they can go without asking the feds for additional permission. I don't know, because there's federal money involved, whatever. And they added $30 million for fuel assistance to families this winter. And they made a slight change in some bottle deposit bill requirements. So everything there, not earth-shattering, right? You're like, okay, yeah, well, whatever. Maybe it doesn't affect you. I get that. But here's the rub. And there's an excellent, excellent, excellent article. That's in Hearst, Connecticut Media, Connecticut Post, Connecticut Insider, Dan Haar, columnist Dan Haar. You probably read him. I reference his stuff here on the show a lot. Dan Haar is hardly a conservative, all right? And listen, writers are who they are. Be nice. Although, wouldn't it really be nice if Hearst or the Hartford Courant had a real bona fide conservative op-ed writer? Wouldn't that be nice? Now, you know, there are a few of them in the state, but I mean, come on, the Hearst chain, do they have a bona fide, dollars to donuts conservative op-ed writer on that? I don't think so. Maybe they do, but that, I stray from the point. But as Dan Haar writes here quite properly, and he's even getting skewered a little bit on social media because our buddy Tom Dudchick at the Connecticut at the Capitol Report said, wow, hell must have frozen over when Dan Haar agrees with the Republicans. However, Dan Haar says here, that list of the bills, the four major bills yesterday, would have been four separate, unrelated bills in the regular session that starts on January 4th. So if they had waited, I don't know, if they had waited, 5 weeks or so, they could have gotten it done. But because it wasn't a special session, if they waited till January 4th, you would have lawmakers voting on four separate bills. Okay, so Paul, seriously, we don't understand. Where are you going on this? But they were all packed into one bill yesterday. Well, what's the problem with that? And here's the rub for folks, and this is not me saying this. This is Dan Haar saying this, quote, because Democrats in the House and Senate overwhelmingly agreed on all five measures. Again, because Democrats in the House and the Senate overwhelmingly agreed on all five measures. Martin Looney of New Haven, quote, "We see no reason not to package it all in one bill," right? So again, there you go. And there's an example. I try to tell people. They say, well, the Republicans never put anything forward. Yes, they do. Or yes, they want more debate on a bill or want to put amendments to a bill. But 9 times out of 10, it's never even entertained by the majority. However, Haar writes, that way of operating forces lawmakers, again, you pack everything into one bill, forces lawmakers to vote for parts of the bill that they oppose or vote against parts that they like. In other words, and this is popping up on social media, you have lawmakers saying, well, I overwhelmingly support 3 of the 4 parts in this bill, but I don't like the 4th thing unless we debate it more. But if I go no because of the 4th part of the bill, guess what? My vote is nullified because I like the other 3 parts of the bill. Dan Haar writes, this points to something that does matter in an era when the nation, even in the state, stands divided politically with anger between both parties. Haar writes, yesterday was a chance for Democrats, who totally control the state, to hand an olive branch across the aisle saying, yes, we get that the single vote helps us politically, but we're going to try and heal the wounds of a nasty era, unquote. In other words, Dan Haar said what the Democrats should have done yesterday is say, okay, let's debate these 4 things separately and maybe allow you to split your votes. Now, what were the odds that the Democratic majority in Hartford was going to do that? Huh? I think you found out. So all these pundits, and we saw all of them, you know, post the election, well, the Republicans are at a crossroad. They must put better policies up to be considered. That's not the point. The point is some people, the Democratic majority in Hartford, oftentimes they don't want to hear any other policies or consider any other things unless it's from them. And you just heard Ed Oliveira in the local newsroom right here at WICC talk about what happened in that special session yesterday. And this gentleman was part of it on the state Senate side. Republican State Senator Tony Wong, Fairfield. We'll talk to Tony about that right now. Tony, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Paul. Thanks for having me, and happy holidays to you and your listeners.
You too, Tony. Thanks for coming on, and to you and your family from us as well. Tony, a couple things. Before we talk about, I guess, the more controversial thing here, which was the process yesterday that was, I think, eloquently written about in Dan Haar's piece in the Hearst, Connecticut media today. Let's talk about what actually happened. So nothing that we didn't think was going to be taken up actually happened yesterday, right? The agenda, save for the process of such, which we'll get to in a minute, that was pretty much a no surprise deal, right?
It was not a surprise. And in fact, it was long overdue. These were the very same issues that were brought up by Senate Republicans in June and August. But conveniently, there was an election to be held, so it wasn't relevant then. But immediately after the elections, voila, it became an urgent special session. The critical issues that we were discussed and passed, and necessarily so in a bipartisan basis, was the low-income heating home energy program for those that are struggling with $6 to $8 a gallon oil to heat their homes, the gas tax that was due to expire on the 1st of December, now instead of a complete elimination, as the Republicans have requested, it is now a phase-in period of 5 cents every month till the end of May, back to the 25 cents. So it doesn't go away. It's a phase-in. And then the other areas of hero pay, we talked about it in the budget debates in May of this year, in saying that the $30 million that was allocated for private sector employees, our first responders, our hospital workers, our grocery workers, our truckers, these all were considered essential workers that were not properly compensated. And I strongly believe they should have been because they were out there doing the essential work. But unfortunately, we decided to give out a $1.4 billion state employees contract that did not consider and include additional hero pay, but we didn't take care of the private sector, and we gave a little bit more money to that. I felt that it was appropriate and important. The other critical issue was allowance of free bus fares till the end of March to at least get people back to work to alleviate the high cost of fuel and the burden of them being able to do that. So these were non-controversial and had true bipartisan support. But interestingly, another segment that was not heavily covered was we also put in a provision to delay the implementation of the increase options, the increase choices of 5-cent deposits of bottles. That was inserted into there. Now, what you had there, Paul, and that's the crux of the problem, is these were five very distinct and unique bills that were all important, and in a normal course of a debate would have had substantive debate, substantive merit, and in some ways made better. But unfortunately, we lumped everything into one yay or nay bus bill, omnibus bill, and that's the problem. It isn't transparent. It isn't democracy. And the fact was, it was one-party rule. The governor sat with a Democratic majority, and they decided that was the way to go.
Thoughts on the one-day special session yesterday from Republican State Senator Tony Wong of Fairfield. You know, Tony, I had to kind of just shake my head tongue-in-cheek and laugh and read about what happened yesterday. And you touched on it a bit before the break in Dan Haar's excellent piece today in the Hearst, Connecticut media publications about, you know, yesterday would have been a perfect time to illustrate what everybody, Tony, waxes poetic about. Oh, we need two-party rule in this state, and Connecticut can't be just a one-party state, and the Republicans do have some good ideas. Well, geez, Tony, to me, and I wasn't there, you tell me you were, you tell me if I'm wrong, what happened yesterday I see is almost the complete antithesis of that, with the majority party saying, well, yeah, that's nice, but we have the votes, so it'll work this way.
It is the arrogance of one-party rule. The lack of real respect for the democratic process is what's deeply troubling here. And that is a great example. There was no Republicans in the conversation in the language being drafted. The concepts were readily discussed and raised by Republicans in June of this year. It was dismissed as not relevant. So we did take, as Republicans, a source of pride in looking at addressing the gasoline tax. But we offered an amendment to remove that 25 cents instead of the phase-in. We also looked at the low-energy LIHEAP program, that it was woefully underfunded and anticipating energy cost. Another issue that could have been taken up is discussing the outrageously high rate increases by Eversource and UI that came on the heel of our legislative debates. So there was an opportunity on process. And Dan Haar wrote a great piece on it. But the only criticism I would say on that, Paul, is where were they in the past years?
Well, yeah.
When this arrogant one-party rule occurred,
this didn't happen just yesterday, Tony. I'm pretty sure it didn't.
Absolutely. Where were they when we passed an omnibus budget that had no Republican input, that had legislative bills that never passed out of committee? They were tucked into. I still remember, Paul, in 1 year that we had over 250 unvetted or unpassed out of committee bills that were inserted into a budget that was over 1,000 pages, and it was a yay or nay vote. And this is the problem, is it lays traps for election year shenanigans and saying, you voted against education, you voted against helping students in need, because it was one vote out of 1,000 pages and 300 legislation that gets passed through. It is the absolute arrogance of power. And the thing is, it's one-party rule. Whether it's Democrat or Republican, it happens. And I know you mentioned quite a bit, former Senator Joe Lieberman talking about sausage making. There are limits to sausage making versus the arrogance of saying we can do whatever we want and people are happy because they voted for us in November. They like what's happening.
Yeah, it is. And hopefully this does not go on in the new session, Tony, of course, which you will be a part of come the turn of the calendar. One of the issues, though, that really rubbed me the wrong way of the ones that were talked about, Tony, and you talked about and were voted on yesterday, was the heroes pay thing. And I don't know, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but kind of, Tony, the cavalier attitude, like, well, basically, and I'm kind of speaking tongue-in-cheek here, rhetorically, kind of paraphrasing, the attitude of, well, we screwed the math up, so we're not going to be able to give you kind of sort of what we promised, but too bad. And I read that yesterday, and I talked about it, and I even had some callers who called in and said, hey, I applied for this. What's going to happen? And I'm like, I don't know. That whole thing, Tony, when we have a $2 billion budget surplus, I'm kind of like saying, what? I mean, how do you do that?
Paul, I was deeply offended when you talked about our frontline workers, healthcare workers that we laud, and grocery workers, truck drivers, and the fact that not one first responder is eligible for this hero pay is deeply offensive to me. Now, on the crux of that, we as a legislature decided that we were going to agree to a $1.4 billion contract agreement with our state employees that explicitly put into the contract, this does not account for what we will expect in heroes pay, and the fact that they got $3,500 as a signing bonus or a bonus when we are splitting hairs about giving money to people on the front line doing essential work to keep our economy going, to make sure that our goods are delivered, that our loved ones that go into hospitals and healthcare facilities are cared for, and that first responders are continuing to do the work. It's deeply offensive, and I'm troubled by it. But again, it is the lack of transparency. It got done, and the kind of indifference in saying, "Hey, we screwed up. We're promising 1,000. We're going to give you 300, and you're going to like it." But. That may be, but when you put in the backdrop of a $3,500 bonus to our state employees and a new contract that we gave to them that is still negotiating hero pay for them, it's deeply offensive to our private sector employees. And it's not saying anything. Every one of those employees that worked in an essential role deserve our support and our respect, and ultimately the proper compensation. And we haven't done that, and it's deeply disrespectful.
Yeah, Tony, and I'm seeing here, and I want to wrap up with this. At least two of the big city mayors here, or the leaders, Hartford and New Haven, are looking for, according to this story in Hearst, they want to make buses or bus rides, which it kind of intrigues me. They want to make the free bus fares permanent. I don't know what Bridgeport has said about that. I know, Tony, there are some cities in the U.S. that have a couple of major cities are doing that or trying to do that. What are the logistics there? And the governor said something yesterday where the federal government would have somewhat of a say in that. Do you expect that to be taken up after the first of the year?
No doubt. It will be a Democratic agenda. And if the big cities want it, I'm certain it will be addressed. But that being said, I understand it is important for those that are financially struggling, and particularly with increase inflation and fuel costs, that the ability to get to your work location is essential. But it comes at a cost. Someone is going to be footing the bill. Who's going to be footing the bill when we have our municipalities that are struggling with budget challenges and their ability to provide goods and services? Where is that money coming from? And I think that's the struggle we have with budgeting. There is not one good policy decision that we wish we could do. And that's the thing. You call it pay sick leave, raising minimum wage, and all the various. They're all really noble and important ideas. But nevertheless, it comes at a cost. Why are we not discussing the balance of good, sustainable policy instead of the feel good and pay the bill later? That is the fundamental of bad policymaking and the arrogance of not listening to all the shareholders that bear the burden on our policy decisions. And again, going back to the beginning of this, this lack of transparency, this lack of respectful for democratic engagement between the two-party system is symptomatic of the arrogance and bad policymaking. And unfortunately, it is the taxpayers of Connecticut that bears the brunt of it. But they're responsible in some ways, Paul, because guess what? Come every election year, they elect them. So guess what? There must be some imaginal elixir that occurs in November that makes people forget.
Tony, I didn't think I would hear the word elixir today, but you changed my mind. Tony, thanks. We appreciate it. We'll talk down the road, my friend. Thank you.
Happy holidays.
You too, Tony. State Senator Tony Wong. There it is. Yes, he says it must be an elixir there. So there you go. So, look. The party infighting, the procedure yesterday, yeah, I get it. It's big club over small club. But the arrogance on the heroes pay thing for private, and I know it's going to be the full $1,000 for some lower income folks. But damn it, you made a promise. The state made a promise. They kept saying $1,000. And now, well, you know what? The program proved more popular than we thought, so we don't have enough money. So, take your $200 or $300 and go pound sand, okay? Hey, because if it's not confusing enough, why don't we talk more about cryptocurrency? Yeah, crypto. It's not an exciting new breakfast food, no. It's digital currency. Some are a little safer than others, but everybody's still wondering about the crash of this company, FTX. Oh, sorry. Few billion dollars gone. Our next guest is senior research faculty, is a senior research faculty member at the American Institute for Economic Research, formerly the chief economist for the U.S. Senate Committee on Banking, the Housing and Urban Affairs Committee as well. He's also worked at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy, among other notable appointments. Dr. Thomas Hogan joins us to talk about crypto and whether or not there should be more or less regulation. Dr. Hogan, hi, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Does the FTX thing, Dr. Hogan, did that surprise you or not? Was that an oh wow moment for you or a kind of an I told you so moment?
Yeah, I think it was surprising to a lot of people in the crypto industry. So, you know, FTX was one of the largest exchanges and advertised itself as the safe, regulated way to invest in crypto. And yet it failed anyway as one of a series of large failures. But it's funny because, you know, most people that are outside the crypto industry are seeing this as a major collapse of crypto and a problem of crypto. But people within the crypto industry, they see FTX as sort of a regular financial company that just happens to be in the crypto industry. And so they actually believe that crypto is a good thing that could have prevented this problem and is even safer than traditional finance.
So I'm glad you mentioned that because my next question was going to be, was it caused by crypto in and of itself or just now, I guess? We don't know what Mr. Bankman-Fried's going to ultimately plead, if anything, here, or if he's going to just run and hide. Or was it just a case of a bad company run by a bunch of dopes?
Right. So this problem appears to not be a problem of bad investments and not be a problem of cryptocurrency, but just a traditional fraud. We don't know for sure, but all the indications are that Sam Bankman-Fried, that was the major owner of FTX, was also the major owner of a hedge fund called Alameda Research. And what he and the other executives appear to have done is taken the depositor funds from FTX, the exchange, and funneled them to his hedge fund, Alameda Research, to prevent it from failing. And so they just defrauded their investors, and that's why the company failed.
And is that criminal?
Absolutely. So it's a major crime, and I it's a big mystery right now why Sam Bankman-Fried has not been arrested. He's actually in the Bahamas right now and being watched by Bahamian authorities. But this is the kind of thing that people go to jail for their entire lives. I mean, he defrauded people out of billions of dollars. People lost their entire life savings. Even his own employees had been encouraged to keep all of their money at FTX, and the employees lost all of their life savings. And so this is a terrible, terrible crime that he should probably go to jail for.
Crypto in the news. Dr. Thomas Hogan is the guest, senior research faculty member at the American Institute for Economic Research. He's been a chief economist for the U.S. Senate Committee on Banking, working with the Cato Institute as well. Crypto needs less regulation, not more, says our guest, Dr. Hogan. Dr. Hogan, why do you say that? Is it a case of just letting the free market regulate itself?
Well, there are a lot of advantages to the new cryptocurrency technology. So it's all built on blockchain technology, which allows us to track every single trade that people make. And so if you're trying to invest in a company or a decentralized exchange that's built on blockchain technology, you can see that they're holding your funds. You can see that all of the collateral is there. And you don't have to worry that some company is risking your money or that they're going to fail and not be able to pay you back, because you can see it all available on the blockchain.
So would then, if that is in place, that blockchain technology, which I have heard about and read a little about, would that have conceivably or not eliminated fully or slowed down the chance of what happened with FTX?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are other companies that are exchanges that are built on blockchain. And you can, for those companies, you can see exactly how much money they have. You can see when you make an investment that your investment is there and someone else has not taken that money. And that's why people that are in crypto, they consider this to be a much safer and more transparent way to do finance compared to traditional financial companies. I mean, FTX was a traditional financial company that was taking risk and ended up failing. They just happened to be doing that in cryptocurrency instead of in the stock market or some other risky area. And so crypto people see FTX as a failure of traditional finance and a reason why we need people using the blockchain to be transparent and be protected.
So what would be wrong then, Dr. Hogan, if it's the antithesis of your argument, saying, okay, we'll use all this blockchain technology, but we need that with more regulation, either from states or from the feds? Why not go for the more regulation and the blockchain technology as well?
Well, there are a number of problems with financial regulation the way that we do it in the United States. One is just that it slows down companies, it slows down innovation because it's, you know, cumbersome and expensive to comply with all the regulations. But I think a lot of people don't realize that regulations, at least in the banking and financial system, tend to increase risk sometimes rather than decrease it. And that happens for a lot of reasons. One is that a complicated regulatory system is a lot like a complicated tax code where people can just evade the taxes if they have a good lawyer. That's what banks do with regulations, is to they get around them, but also because the regulators don't always know themselves what is a risky asset and what is not. For example, in 2008, in the early 2000s, they encouraged banks to hold lots of mortgage-backed securities because the regulators thought that those were safe. But those ended up being a major cause of the 2008 financial crisis.
Yeah.
So the regulators don't always know what's best.
And again, the guest is Dr. Thomas Hogan. What do you make, Dr. Hogan, of now these rumblings, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it with your connections to the government on your resume, at the fact that the feds now, the U.S. is looking to get into digital currency and cryptocurrency. Good, bad, let the market shake it out. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a little uncertain right now because it's not clear what the Federal Reserve's intentions are. The Federal Reserve already controls the money supply, and so they could put out a digital dollar that would be a central bank digital currency. And if they did that, it's not clear whether they would only offer that to banks the way that they do with their regular reserve policy, or whether they would offer it to individuals. If they decide to do it to individuals, it's pretty scary because that's what China does, and they track everyone in their every transaction, track every payment you ever make, and can effectively punish people that are doing things that are politically unpopular. And so that seems downright scary for us to be doing in the United States.
What about people who hear Dr. Hogan, and I understand we're not doing this segment as a financial advice, but I've interviewed so many people here on this topic who hear about crypto and say, well, you know, got a few thousand bucks floating around, and you know, geez, it's, I mean, you probably get asked this all the time, right? What should I do? Look, a lot of people have told me these are investments, they have risks, they can turn on a dime. If this is your Las Vegas money or your vacation money that you're not going to use for that, well, okay. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, economists and financial advisors and professors, like you said, I'm not giving financial advice, but most people would recommend you have a diversified portfolio.
Yeah.
And that a small percentage of your asset be in sort of high risk assets that might have some big return, but might have some, you know, loss as well. But I would recommend that, especially for people that aren't familiar with crypto, there are a lot of scams out there. And so doing it through a major exchange like Coinbase is one of the you know, it's hard to say this because FTX claimed to be safe and regulated,
yeah.
And they just failed, right? But Coinbase, or if you have a regular financial advisor that can help you get into traditional crypto, or like even Fidelity, most major financial advisors have some tools that they can help you get into cryptocurrency. And so there are safe ways to do that, especially, you know, for people that aren't familiar with already, you can talk to a financial advisor about it.
10 years from now, Dr. Hogan, when you and I are talking on November 29th, 2032, what will the state of crypto be like 10 years from now?
So, you know, I think when we talk about cryptocurrency, people still – we talk about it as a currency, but the truth is that the technology and the blockchain that it's being built on I think are going to be much more important, and that the currency will just be a way to help facilitate that technology. So I think – we're building a whole financial system, like a parallel financial system on top of crypto. All the new things about the metaverse and the new internet and new social media companies are all being built on crypto technology. And so I think that will be the very big advantage. Of course, I knew a little bit about Bitcoin and blockchain 10 years ago now, and I wish I had invested in that time. I would be a billionaire by now. But I don't know for sure what will happen. But I think even beyond the cryptocurrencies themselves, this technology will be a foundation for a lot of other industries, and hopefully we'll see a lot of development.
Dr. Thomas Hogan, senior researcher, American Institute for Economic Research. He was also the chief economist for the U.S. Senate Committee on Banking, Housing and Urban Affairs as well, and has been with the Cato Institute, several teaching positions on the collegiate level as well. Dr. Hogan, thank you. We appreciate it. Take care. We'll chat down the road. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. There you go. All right. So, folks, be careful if you're doing cryptocurrency. Be careful with your blockchain.